Chapter 3. A Confluence of Interests. "They've already left?" a surprised Jarlaxle asked when he stepped out of the teleporter to enter the small chamber in the bowels of the host tower of the Arcane in Luskan, to find Beniago waiting for him, pacing anxiously and holding the small item Jarlaxle would need to catch them if his suspicion was accurate. Beniago confirmed the departure with a nod. "The Pelican was spied sailing south past Orkney yesterday at dawn," he explained.
"She'll come in, then."
Beniago shook his head. "Captain Arango knows that his last acts of piracy went beyond the edicts of the five captains, and that he's coming here with a price on his shaggy head. They'll sail right by us until the outrage is diminished." Jarlaxle sighed. "Civilizing these humans is more difficult than I would have thought. They have an amazing capacity for ignoring their own reflections. We are surrounded by Captain Arangos, yet the majority of these humans remain so convinced that we drow are the evil ones."
"True enough, but Captain Arango has got more than human blood in him," Beniago reminded him.
"Pelican's far out and at full sail. She'll glide right past Luskan, beyond the horizon, and probably stay out wide of the coast all the way to Baldur's Gate."
"That might be Arango's intent, but I expect he'll fall far short of his goals," Jarlaxle said, walking past and taking the magical sculpture Beniago held up for him.
"High seas out there," Beniago warned. "Expect to get wet."
"You don't have to smile when you say that," Jarlaxle muttered.
"Oh, but I do," the High Captain replied with a laugh. Jarlaxle respected that. The pair left the host tower moments later, crossing to the northwest coast of the island, the lights of the famed City of Sails behind them. This was where the highest surf hit the island, and thus the most remote part, and also, as Beniago reminded him, the most likely place along the city's coast to find a large shark.
I know, Beniago said, holding up his hands against Jarlaxle's scowl. "I don't need to smile when I say it."
Jarlaxle could only laugh and remind himself that Beniago's fine mood was not unexpected. In the nearly 2 years since the defeat of the demon hordes, the northern sword coast had found peace once more and was settling into a fine place. Luskan was back under Bregandiev's full control, and even though the folk of the city now understood the true nature of the power behind the High Captain to be a gang of drow, although Beniago continued to wear his human disguise, complaints were few and far between. Beniago served as a benevolent leader, and with the new relationship to Waterdavy and House Margaster and their connections, the goods were flowing and Luskan was thriving once more. It helped that Bregandiev had driven the gnolls and demons from the city, but Bregandiev had saved the lives of so many of Luskan's folk, human, dwarf, halfling, elf, and all other sorts. The people of Luskan were living well, surrounded by allies and with as formidable a fleet as any city on the Sword Coast, albeit one particularly disorganized. Life had gotten easier. Maybe too easy, Jarlaxle thought, as he set the sculpture, a small sailing vessel, into the water and whispered a command word. "Bauble." Immediately the craft began to glow and to grow, becoming a small square-sailed sailboat, suitable for only a couple of passengers. Emblazoned on its side was the name Jarlaxle had given it, the very command word that brought forth the magical craft. Jarlaxle stepped onto Bauble and took a seat, motioning to the bench beside him. Beniago considered it for a moment, but shook his head.
"It's been a long time since you've put a blade to good use," Jarlaxle said.
"It's been a longer time since I've wanted to." Jarlaxle tipped his great hat to that and turned his focus seaward. Jarlaxle whispered, "Beacon," and a glass set on the prow became a light, rotating slowly left to right, then back again. The movement tightened back and forth, just right of center, then narrowed some more, finding its target. A magical wind arose from the taffrail, filling the sail, and the boat slid out from the shore. Jarlaxle overrode the guiding magic of the beacon at first to keep her straight through the breakers. Splashing and bouncing, taking air more than once, Bauble proved up to the task.
though the mercenary captaining her was soaked when the little craft had at last settled beyond Luskin's surf. There in the calmer seas, Jarlaxle gave over the steering to the magic, and instead took up the single pole rising from the middle of the bench seat. Slowly he pushed it to lean forward, and every finger's breadth of movement increased the wind at his back. Soon, wakes sprayed high at the sides of the prow. "Following winds and fair seas," Jarlaxle said, reversing the adjectives in the sailor's typical blessing. What a marvelous little item this was. The most superb gift from a lord of Waterdeep upon the signing of a trade agreement between his house and King Brunner of Gauntlegrim. The lights of Luskin receded behind the fast-gliding boat, the clear sky above showing Jarlaxle a vision of pure tranquility and peace. For a long time he just basked in that sensation, the ocean smell and the rhythm of the swells beneath him, the water spraying from the prow becoming almost a chant, a mantra of meditation. Only the lights of a ship far ahead broke that welcome trance, a reminder to the rogue that the peace wouldn't last. Dudemont's Revenge was likely the fastest schooner on the Sword Coast, and was running at full sail now, her cloth fore and aft billowing in the strong southwestern breeze. Supplemented by her magical winds, though, Jarlaxle's small magical craft had no problem gaining on her. The beacon on the prow kept the small boat running straight for a point on the Revenge's port side, and as she neared, Jarlaxle lifted a whistle and blew. He saw the veteran crew members scurrying about almost immediately. They had seen him coming even with his meager single running light, and several appeared at the taffrail, pointing down and waving. Others showed at the port rail, some working a crank to unwind a plank that had been secured up tight against the hull, a diagonal walkway running from the deck down to water level. As the plank went perpendicular to the hull, a landing board freed up, flipped over, and fell down against the water with a splash. Jarlaxle's guiding beacon steered him right to the landing, where he gracefully stepped from the boat, holding his small craft by that high prow. He spoke quiet commands, and his boat shrank suddenly, becoming a miniature replica once more. And he tucked it into his pouch as he made his way up to the deck. Before he even crested the deck level, he heard the distant sound of retching and, guessing the source, spread a wide grin. "We thought you would miss all the fun," said Bunny Charlie, captain of Dudemont's Revenge, who stood just beyond the rail to greet him. "Never," Jarlaxle assured her. He stepped past her, heading for the starboard rail further aft, and the sounds of seasickness, but Bonnie Charlie grabbed his arm, turning him about. She didn't say anything at first, but her grave expression spoke for her. "You still fear the mission?" Jarlaxle remarked. "Captain Arango's a smart one," Bonnie Charlie replied. "He's gobbled up the best crew of scalawags cut loose by the Margaster invasion." "You mean the most vicious?" "Pirates," Bonnie Charlie said. "Luskin was, and still, full of them. And Arango got the toughest. Pelican sailed all the way to the Sea of Moving Ice. Arango's crew goes to 10 towns in Icewind Dale for scrimshaw, and take more than they pay for. There are thousands up there in the Dale, all tough folk living on the edge of disaster every day, but they bend the knee and trim the coins to Arango." "The legend is greater than the truth," Jarlaxle told her. "That's almost always the case with the powerful. When you strip the armor, there's more fat to be seen than muscle." After a moment of consideration, Bonnie Charlie replied, "As with Bregan de Earth?" "Almost always the case," Jarlaxle pointedly returned. "Don't you start thinking Pelican an easy picking," Bonnie Charlie warned. "She's got 12 wizards and priests, all skilled in sea fighting. She's got a crew full of brawlers, murderers, gnolls, half-ogres, and every other mix of danger a mind can imagine." "Yeah, she's the strongest corsair, captained by the most notorious and feared pirate in the north now," the mercenary agreed. "And that's exactly why Pelican must be stopped and put to the deeps right now." The serious tone of Jarlaxle's voice had the woman back on her heels. Her reaction told Jarlaxle just how much this coming fight meant to him and his hopes for Luskin, even beyond the more personal gain of gathering a certain weapon for his warrior friend. Luskin is bleeding still, he went on. Luskin has been bleeding for decades.
Luskin's been your own for years, Pawnee Charlie said.
Jarlaxle shook his head.
Not really. We've pulled the strings from the shadows, indeed, but that's not enough, no more.
Jarlaxle the king? Pawnee Charlie said slyly, tilting back her head to eye the drow suspiciously.
He scoffed. I don't want to be the king.
Then what?
Why are you caring for Pelican and Captain Arongo, one way or the other?
Because I want the people of Luskin to want me to be their king.
You just said you didn't want to be that.
I don't. But when they come to see what Breaking the Earth is really offering them, I expect that they will demand no less from any who would deign to lead them.
Another long pause from the woman.
You're a strange fellow, Jarlaxle. What is it you think you're offering them?
Freedom for men like Captain Arongo.
Jarlaxle noted that if he tapped Bonnie Charlie's forehead in that moment, she'd likely topple over backward.
Aye. I'll not argue that Arongo is a dangerous one, he said. Too dangerous.
Dangerous enough to take Luskin from Jarlaxle, the woman replied.
Which of us do you think the people of Luskin would prefer?
You're a drow, she said, as if that were answer enough.
Yes, they know that now. And they know that High Captain Kurth is backed by drow power. But they've known that power for years, even if they didn't know the true identity of it. So I ask again, which of us, Jarlaxle or Arongo, do you think the people of Luskin would prefer?
Old beliefs die hard.
Then
let me ask it differently, Jarlaxle said. Which of us, Jarlaxle or Arongo, does Bonnie Charlie believe better for the City of Sails?
The woman didn't answer other than to nod. She knew, of course, Jarlaxle could see. She had been behind the curtain for months now and understood well the designs of Breaking the Earth, and that those designs benefited the people of Luskin most of all. A moment later, Bonnie Charlie nodded again more confidently.
It's your ship, Captain Bonnie Charlie, Jarlaxle said then. You know what we face out there on the dark waters. And you know now the stakes. If you wish to return to Luskin at once, give your orders. Durdamont's Revenge is Bonnie Charlie's ship to command. Bonnie Charlie plots her course.
Are you talking to me or talking to Luskin?
Yes.
Then good for Luskin, I say, when we put into her long wharf carrying Pelican's Black and Captain Arongo's head.
Jarlaxle tipped his hat and bowed to the captain.
He tossed her an approving wink when he stood straight and turned again for starboard.
You completed your business then? She asked, stopping him before he took his first step.
Jarlaxle nodded, confused for only a moment before he guessed her next question, even as she asked it.
Was Wulfgar there, in Gontalgrim?
I didn't see him, he admitted. I heard that he was out of the tunnels and into Bleeding Vines.
Very well then, she said, disappointment thick in her voice and clear on her sea-weathered face.
Deliver the Pelican to me, and when we return to Luskin, I'll get you a ride through the magical gates so you can go and visit Wulfgar yourself, Jarlaxle promised.
A smile betrayed the woman, but was quickly replaced by a shake of her head, one rooted, quite obviously, in nervousness.
Why do you underestimate the man? Jarlaxle asked. Or is it yourself that you find inadequate for the moment?
I'm not wishing to intrude. He has his life, I've me own.
You have your own because of him, Jarlaxle reminded her.
Because of you?
No, because of Wulfgar.
I trust him more than he trusts me, I am sure, and I am more fond of him than he is of me.
He came to trust Bonnie Charlie, and thus so do I. He is quite impressed with you and would be happy to see you.
The woman shrugged, and even in the starlight, Jarlaxle could see her blush.
He pulled her from that moment with a pointed sigh.
I wish I could go back through the years and find that which brought you to this place in your own heart, he said.
Do you truly value yourself so little that you are afraid to go and see the man?
He has his life and I have mine, she repeated.
You fear he'll reject you.
He has his life and I have mine.
Jarlaxle laughed.
So you reject the rejection before it can be offered. It is such silliness. And I say that with all respect, Captain Bonnie Charlie. I see this in so many around me, elves and drow and dwarves and folk of all ilk, men and women alike. I find it most silly in humans who live so short a time. Why would you waste what could be good days and instead sit miserable and chewing your lips in the fear that those good days won't be good? You're babbling. Far from it. Go and see him and likely find a grand memory in your too short life instead of sitting here and forfeiting the possibility. He has Penelope Harple, she reminded him. Penelope? Jarl Axel said and snickered. She's likely at the Ivy Mansion and is not about to be jealous in any case, I assure you. And if she's not, and isn't Gauntlegrim? She'd probably join you if you had the mind for it, Jarl Axel said with a great laugh. And even if not in that way, we all would do well to spend more time with Penelope Harple. Aye, but we'd all learn a lot from her, particularly in how to enjoy life more. He paused, noting her expression, and added, Yes, even Jarl Axel. That brought a wide grin to Bonnie Charlie and a nod, and Jarl Axel hoped that she would take his advice. Now I must go to my friend, he said after another round of vomiting sounded. How long has he been sick? Since we breached the second wave out of Luskin, Bonnie Charlie said with a genuinely grateful smile and a nod. How long to the Pelican? Before dawn, if we find her sails. So I go to Master Zachnephane. If you want him ready for a fight, you'd best be getting him up from the rail. Jarl Axel tipped his hat again to the captain, and like every time he dealt with Bonnie Charlie, he was very glad that Wulfgar had stood up for her in those early moments when the demon and gnoll fleet led by Brevin and Margaster had overrun Luskin. She was a valuable member of Jarl Axel's team now, an able captain, a scrappy fighter, and with so much critical knowledge and insight into the region and the city itself. And Jarl Axel hadn't lied to her. More than anything else, he wanted the people of Luskin to want the leadership of Bregan d'Irth, and Bonnie Charlie was one of the people who might well get him there. He moved across the deck and around some barrels and sacks to spot a figure resting against the low rail, propped up with his arm over it, but seeming very much like he was about to slide down flat on the deck. Pre-battle jitters, he asked, moving over to stand above Zack. What form of hell is this? Zack replied, trying but not quite managing to lift his gaze high enough to look Jarl Axel in the eye. I warned you that the rolling waves were unsettling, to one who has known only the solidity of land. Shut up. It would be just like the bobbing webways of Jed Nassad, I believe, was your answer. It's hard for me to recall the exact words as you were saying them while chewing undercooked eggs, if I'm remembering correctly. The mere mention of the runny eggs had Zack rolling back to get his face out over the rail, where he began to throw up some more. Captain Arango will prove a formidable foe by all accounts, Jarl Axel said. Will you have me serve as your champion and defeat him? I would respectfully refuse, for in that instance, how would you properly claim his sword as your own? Zachnephane leaned a bit and lifted his scowl at the mercenary leader, unable to hide his intrigue at this new motivation. Come, come, Jarl Axel said, offering a hand. Let's get you up and walking at least. Zack didn't take the hand and looked away. I need more time. Jarl Axel heaved a great sigh and pulled the magical eye patch off his face, then bent low and set it over Zack's head, adjusting it to cover the weapon master's left eye. He grabbed Zack by the shoulder and began to hoist, and now Zack did come up and stood straight and not wobbly before Jarl Axel. His expression went from uncertainty to befuddlement in fast order. The true sight to the armor of the eye patch is a great aid, Jarl Axel said. I was the same as you when I first sailed these rough waters.
But now you don't need it?
Oh, no.
And why didn't you give me the eye?
Zack stopped short and scowled mightily. You'll never grow accustomed to the roll of the seas without the discomfort.
I'm never coming out here again.
Jarl Axel snorted but didn't argue. Take heart, my friend. You will find the reward worth the vomit.
Zack turned his head to the side and spat out over the rail. You need associates on the land. I'm better serving there. I'm only out here for you, Jarl Axel said. Why? Zack asked skeptically, and he tilted his head to the side and studied Jarl Axel through the eye patch, using another of its marvelous enchantments to recognize honesty in the rogue's words. Thank you? Consider this part of your journey a growing experience, Jarl Axel explained. You don't have your son's scimitars anymore. Do you think I would allow my second?
Kimuriel is your second.
He's the other half of my first. In my part of Breaking the Earth, in my, shall we say, personal journeys, you are my partner. You called me your second, now I'm your partner? And does Artemis and Treri know of this new arrangement? We've a fight coming. Are you going to argue about everything?
Titles matter.
What would you prefer?
You're better, Zack said, and he pulled the eye patch from his head and tossed it back to Jarl Axel.
Both his claim and his action would have carried more weight if Zack hadn't chosen the very next moment to relieve himself of the rest of the contents of his stomach as he slumped down once more against the rail.
Keep chumming, and you'll bring a host of sharks up on our side, Bonnie Charlie called out.
Why is she still alive? Zack asked. More alive than you, which won't bode well when we catch the pelican, Jarl Axel told him.
You don't need me to catch the pelican.
A warrior should earn his sword.
I have a sword, too.
You have a pair of sharp sticks. Captain Arongo of the Pelican, he has a sword.
Do you think he would beat me with his sword against my sticks?
That's the challenge, isn't it?
Is it?
Jarl Axel shrugged. If you care. Arongo also has a hold full of innocent prisoners, including children, all of whom will be put to a horrible death or sold into slavery. He held out the eye patch. Zacnaphane stared at it for a moment, then pulled himself to his feet and refused the offer. He closed his eyes and wasn't trembling, and Jarl Axel could see him physically steeling himself against the seasickness, yet another reminder to Jarl Axel of the force of Zack's willpower. He was so glad to have this one by his side again. Zack opened his eyes.
You owe me some eggs.
It will be our victory meal, Jarl Axel promised. Hours later, Jarl Axel emerged from Captain Bonnie Charlie's quarters, where he had realized some much-needed rest, to find a growing commotion along the starboard rail. Several sailors were gathered about a pair of men wielding gaff hooks, taking turns reaching low over the rail as if trying to recover something from the sea. From Pelican, Bonnie Charlie told Jarl Axel as he neared. She nodded her chin to the pile of retrieved items, clothing mostly, including a shredded dress that seemed to be tangled about something. As he neared, Jarl Axel winced and turned, realizing the tangle to be a severed arm, still caught in what was left of the gown's sleeve. One of the gaffers yelped and fell back from the rail, losing his grip on the long pole. A woman caught the handle and held it tight, bringing it over to reveal that the end of it was broken away.
White shark, Bonnie Charlie told Jarl Axel. They're following Pelican and Arongo's crews, having fun with it.
Fun, Jarl Axel echoed with disgust. He shook his head. How far?
We'd see her sails if the sun was up.
Every moment we waste might cost another her life. Bonnie Charlie nodded.
Fill the sails with wind, she told her chief mate. Douse all lights, not a candle burning, and shut 'em up. Every one. Not a sound from revenge. Arongo and his dogs will see us before they hear us, and when they see us, it'll be too late for them.
The woman nodded and ran off, relaying the orders.
They'll use their captives against us before the fighting starts, Bonnie Charlie told Jarl Axel.
The drow rogue shook his head.
I have a plan. You might want to be telling the captain.
I won't be on your ship, Captain, Jarl Axel replied with a grin, and he tapped the pouch holding his magical boat.
You're going out?
Jarl Axel nodded, the plan only then formulating in his thoughts. I'll leave you with all my forces to deploy as you will. The opening fight is Bonnie Charlie's to command.
And then?
And then I'll help, was all that Jarlaxle would offer at that time. And with a tip of his hat, he took his leave, going below decks to the back corner of the main hold, where he had left Zach Nafanen and Trary with several other Bregan D'Earth associates. He hadn't even stepped from the ladder when he felt Dudermont's Revenge lifting her prow a bit higher, the full sails catching the wind and racing along. Yes, he thought, he was glad indeed that he had listened to Wulfgar regarding Bonnie Charlie. Captain Bonnie Charlie. They heard a commotion far ahead in the darkness, a scream, some splashes, then more screams, increasing in both number and intensity. Jarlaxle leaned on the pole, trying to get as much out of the windy magic as he could. Beside him on Bauble, the priestess Dabne whispered to herself, gathering magical energy for the fast-approaching trial. Up forward, beyond the mast, Zach Nafanen and Artemis and Trary leaned out on either side of the small boat's high prow, straining their eyes to peer into the darkness.
"A running light," Zach whispered, pointing ahead.
"Trick of the starlight on the water?" Jarlaxle asked.
"No, more," and Trary put in. His dark cloak billowed out behind him in a strong wind gust, and he popped his hand atop his new hat, a stylish black affair with a five-finger crown, pinched in front, and a three-finger brim bent low in front, lying flat on the sides and curling slightly up in the back, dressed less for battle than for a night on the town, but no less deadly for it.
"Lanterns," Zach Nafanen quietly declared. "A torch. They want to watch the sharks tearing at those they've thrown in the water," Entreri said. He leaned to the side and low, peering back at Jarlaxle into the bouncing bottom seam of the single square sail. "You still think any of those pirates are worth sparing?"
"Some have asked the same of Artemis and Entreri in the past," Jarlaxle reminded him.
"When you were a younger man, you would have done this?" Dabne asked.
"No," Entreri answered with conviction. "Not to prisoners whose only crime was to get caught by the pirates." He turned away and looked ahead and added grimly and softly, "But I'll do it to pirates."
"Dabne, silence us and darken Bauble," Jarlaxle said. He reached into his belt pouch and lifted a cylindrical item, then kept lifting until the long scope came free of the bag of holding. He set it on a notch on Bauble's prow, extending it far forward of the craft. And though Dabney's globe of darkness covered the small boat, stern to prow, sail to water, Jarlaxle could still view their destination through the far end of the scope, which was beyond the globe and enchanted to work in exactly this situation. The lights of the Pelican came clearer to Jarlaxle as the small boat raced across the open sea. Jarlaxle reached back and tapped Dabney, signaling her to remove the magical darkness, and as soon as it was gone, he motioned for the others to be quiet, and for Dabne to also lift the silence spell.
"Slow us," Jarlaxle whispered, and
Entreri pulled back the lever.
"They'll soon see the Revenge," Zach Nafanen remarked. "Good. They'll be looking at her and not at our own low profile," Entreri added.
Jarlaxle nodded and was pleased by Entreri's exchange with Dabne. He seemed a different man now, right down to his choice of hat. Releasing the souls from his vampiric dagger appeared to have lifted a great weight from his shoulders, as if now, and only now, he was believing in his own chance of redemption.
"You all know your places?" Jarlaxle whispered,
and to Dabne he added,
"You have the proper spells ready?"
"We'll be as silent as shadows," she promised.
"Slow, slow," Jarlaxle harshly whispered, waving his arm frantically. Entreri reacted immediately, pulling the throttle all the way back, ceasing the magical wind, and Bauble slowed so dramatically that they all had to catch themselves or pitch forward to the deck or the sea. It took Entreri only a moment after Dabne released the magical darkness to understand Jarlaxle's urgency. For just ahead and off to starboard, something floated in the dark water. As they neared, the shape became that of a woman, bobbing in the sea. Zach Nafanen turned the boat to come up beside her, and Entreri leaned out to grab at the unresponsive form. But the man pulled back in horror, and the woman overturned. Or rather, half the woman overturned. Entreri pushed the pole. The wind kicked up, and Bauble leaped away.
and not a moment too soon as the huge shark broke the surface right behind them, claiming the other half of its meal. The four shaken sailors collected themselves as the small craft raced toward the large ship, not another word of mercy for the pirates spoken between them. Not another word at all. Silent as death, they slid up alongside their target. Jarlaxle brought a dagger into each of his hands with his magical bracers, and with a word to Bauble, he dropped the mast. He stabbed the daggers to catch on to Pelican, hand-walking the small boat back under the steep, curving hull by the high stern, securing them up tight out of sight of the deck near to her rudder. He handed off the stuck daggers to Entreri, stepped back, and used his favorite wand, gluing the crafts together with a glob of viscous goo, and there the four sat, waiting. Very soon after, they heard the commotion above, pirates running about, mates barking orders. Dudemont's Revenge was still far away, but the dark silhouette of her sail was in sight of the four and the small boat soon after, and coming up fast.
"Patience, patience," Jarlaxle whispered when Zack drew his swords.
Jarlaxle was speaking as much to himself as to the others, he realized when he took off his great hat and reached inside. Suddenly, the sky lit up between the two ships, a barrage of small flames leaping out from Pelican, and then a larger missile of burning pitch, the shudder of Pelican's catapult nearly swamping Bauble. Peas of magical flame exploded into huge fireballs, one after another, though they really couldn't be described as balls or anything spherical, as they ignited against Revenge's magical shields, which fended off their flames. The catapult missile hit a wall of wind, sparks and embers flying harmlessly aside, and conjured water rained down on it, stealing most of its fire. Still, much of its payload got through, plunging down across the deck, and the flames of several fireballs also found their targets. One of Revenge's sails was burning. Jarlaxle and the others could hear the screams of more than one sailor caught by the fires or splattered by burning pitch. But Dudemont's Revenge came on, her crack crew reacting as Jarlaxle demanded, as Captain Bonnie Charlie had trained them. Now a volley of fireballs responded from the prow of Revenge, crashing against similar defenses from Pelican. Back and forth it went, and what became quite clear to all was that Pelican had no chance of outrunning the magnificent schooner. Dudemont's Revenge had been built according to the secret plans of Sea Sprite, the legendary Sword Coast pirate hunter, captained by the famous Dudemont. No ship along the Sword Coast could outmaneuver Sea Sprite in her day, and the same was true of Dudemont's namesake, especially with such an excellent crew. And her excellent captain, Jarlaxle was beginning to understand, to his great satisfaction. More shudders rocked Pelican, both from the firing catapult and from some hits scored by Revenge's many wizards. Lightning bolts replaced fireballs as Revenge came up fast on Pelican's stern, and predictably, Pelican began a hard port turn, wanting to give her archers and spellcasters a proper bow rake. "Hold fast," Jarlaxle warned, and almost as soon as he issued the words, Pelican shuddered and lurched violently. "Ice storm," Entreri quietly explained to Zack and Dabney. Revenge's main wizards had waited for the turn, then had sent a torrent of ice and cones of magical freezing into the water before her left sliding, turning prow. The jolt and the grind hadn't stopped the turn, of course, but it had sent a shock of force creaking through Pelican's decks. More than one pirate had gone flying into the water on the port side, the four could hear. And by the time Pelican had recovered from the shock and surprise, Revenge was too close and was herself turning too hard for the bow rake to prove of any consequence. "Count," Jarlaxle told his friends. And Dabney began casting her spell, lifting one hand to offer a countdown to the others. "Five," Jarlaxle said quietly, and he pulled a circular piece of cloth from inside the crown of his great hat. "Four," he said, and he whispered and threw the cloth out, spinning fast. "Three, two," he said quickly, catching up to Dabney's count as his magical cloth, a portable hole, struck the Pelican's hull, opening a wide passage into the ship's lower deck. Before he even finished the count, Artemis and Treri dove through the portable hole, Zacnaphane right behind. A scream greeted them, but one cut very short as Dabney cast her magical silence into the hold. Jarlaxle rolled in through the hole, coming to his feet gracefully to stand at the ready. He called to the bracer on his right wrist, creating another dagger in his hand, bringing it back behind his shoulder, ready to throw. The sight gave him pause, for across this long and narrow room were prisoners, battered, emaciated, chained by shackles affixed to the ceiling. Men and women, children even, hanging by bloody wrists, most slumped. A couple of the poor group somehow maintained an upright posture on their tiptoes, but the children and the shorter adults simply dangled in the air, swinging about with every sway of the ship. Only when Zacnaphane rushed across from left to right did Jarlaxle spot a pirate, a hulking gnoll, who met Zack's charge with a sweeping strike of its spiked club. How clumsy and slow it appeared against the enraged weapon master, whose blades worked in perfect coordination to tap and redirect the club once and again. Zack's left hand stabbed out with blinding speed right behind the sweep, aimed true for the gnoll's gripping hands. The ensuing yelp went unheard in the magical silence, but Jarlaxle understood the agony behind it well as he watched several gnoll fingers go spinning down to the floor. Zacnaphane quick-stepped straight ahead, stabbing left, right, left in rapid succession, filling the pirate with deep wounds and sending it crashing back to the floor and wall. Zack took one step in apparent pursuit, but broke away suddenly to his right, back toward Jarlaxle and Dabney, who was crawling in. He threw himself into a roll, sword coming up at the last moment to knock aside a hurled axe. Jarlaxle leaped ahead and let fly his dagger, then a second almost as soon as the first had left his hand. Then a third and a fourth, all in the air even as the first struck that second pirate, a human this time, plunging into her upraised hand. Then the chest, the shoulder, and the throat met the other three. Both drow fighters were moving then, side by side, and both skidded to an abrupt stop as they noted the third and fourth pirate guards, both gnolls, both with long knives against the throats of hanging prisoners, warding back the attackers. Jarlaxle let his dagger fall and lifted his empty hands high. Zacnaphane hesitated, looking to his companion with surprise. Jarlaxle's grin reassured him that all was under control. A red blade flashed, a wall of ash hung in the air, a severed gnoll head went spinning into the air, and the second pirate gnoll got pushed out to the side, all strength leaving its knife arm, as the sword of Artemis and Treri sprouted through its shoulder, armpit to collar. "Impressive," Zacnaphane said, though his voice could not be heard. Jarlaxle understood anyway, for the salute was shared, and Treri had somehow navigated the narrow chamber to get behind those two without being noticed, and his horizontal swing had turned fast into a dipping blade, even as its dipping and turning wielder put himself into the second uppercut strike. It was executed as perfectly as any master of melee Magther could teach, and better than most drow could possibly learn. It was a move worthy of Zacnaphane, worthy of Drizzt. Jarlaxle set his gaze on Zack and was pleased by the expression he saw there. It was good that Zack's first real introduction to Artemis and Treri the fighter had happened in this manner. Respect was important between these two. The thought was interrupted when all four went flying as the ships collided, Dudermont's Revenge slamming and sliding hard against Pelican's side. The prisoners swung wildly out and back as Jarlaxle's team quickly recovered. He noted how strange it was to see the mouths opened in shocked screams, to see barrels and crates flying and smashing, to feel the tremendous impact, the ceiling beams cracking, almost collapsing, as the boom from Pelican's mainmast fell free. And all of it without a whisper of sound. Bonnie Charlie understood the strength of her ship. Revenge had been built with redundancy, designed to take a beating and keep on sailing. Her hull was magically sealed and would not split apart under a collision or a barrage of catapult or ballistae. Her planking magically warded from fire, where even the scorch of a lightning bolt would leave no more than a black scar. Her sails, too, were magically protected from fire. They might catch in the flames of a fireball, but they wouldn't burn long or fully. And Dudermont's Revenge's mainmast was designed to break free in a collision, and not just fall, but fall in a controlled manner that would turn the boom into a plank onto the deck of the enemy's ship when she came in hard broadside.
The captain didn't hesitate when the ice storm and freezing cones solidified the water before Pelican's turn. She signaled the pilot, and the strong giantess leaned hard into Revenge's wheel, putting the ship into a hard port turn. "Drop 'em," Bonnie Charlie roared when they had just enough momentum and the proper angle for the strike, and her crew let free the sails. They fell with a great whomping sound, furling perfectly to smother the remaining wisps of fires. "Brace!" She didn't need to yell that, for this crew knew well enough what was to come and where to grab a handhold. The two ships came together side to side with cracking beams and smashing timbers, shuddering and screeching. Down fell the main boom, perfectly as designed, tangling in the rigging of Pelican and driving it crashing down as well. The ice slamming Pelican's hull had abruptly halted her turn, giving Revenge the initiative here, and Bonnie Charlie wasn't about to let that advantage pass. The battle heated before the ships had even settled, arches and crossbowmen letting fly, and mostly missing wildly under the shaking and rocking. Pelican's wizards waved their arms to hurl fire and lightning, but they had to start over, for the crashing ice had interrupted all of their castings. Revenge's wizards slowed them more, disrupting their somatic movements by throwing a unified and mighty gust of wind, blowing about anything loose on Pelican's deck, including the pirates themselves. The greater advantage came next, with a score of Brigandier Drow reaching into their innate magics to cover Pelican's deck in magical darkness. The ships settled together. The pirates of the Pelican shot blind as her priests and wizards frantically tried to counter the unexpected, impenetrable shadows. Whenever a lightning bolt came forth from that blackness, a dozen hand crossbow bolts traced it back to its source, and the lightning became no more. Determined that the fight would be on Pelican's decks alone, the attackers flung their grapnels high to tangle in Pelican's remaining rigging, and warriors, led by Bonnie Charlie and the drow, leaped onto those ropes and swung across, while more ran across along the drop beam, and others set boarding planks. By the time Pelican's spellcasters had much of the darkness dispelled, they found Revenge's fighters massing all about them. Archers became swordsmen, priests on both sides turned to healing their comrades, and Pelican's wizards spent more time hiding and casting defensive spells than throwing forth punishing evocations. Wizards were truly deadly in the early moments of ship-to-ship combat, but now with swords crossing all along Pelican's deck, her lightly armored mages were out of their element. Bonnie Charlie found herself in a fight even before the darkness was gone, a gnoll leaping from the gloom to meet her charge. She truly appreciated the strength of the magical sword Jarlaxle had given her, for her parry of the truncheon swinging her way did more than deflect the club, it sheared it in half. A twist of her wrist and a swift thrust sent the gnoll yelping back into the darkness. Except now the darkness was no more, and all around Bonnie Charlie the fighting began in earnest. She had executed the first phases of the attack perfectly. They had crippled Pelican's rigging and mast, had prevented any serious range assault from her before they could get up close, and had scored heavy gains against her fighting force in the beginning moments. But the veteran sailor held no illusions that this would be an easy victory. Pelican had become notorious up and down the Sword Coast because Pelican was capable, her crew seasoned and brutal, her combat tactics practiced and effective. Still, she realized as the fight ensued and the enemy ranks quickly thinned, the crew of Pelican had never faced the warriors of Brigandierth. Jarlaxle caught a poor woman swinging wildly at the end of her shackles. He signaled to Dabne and she ended her magical silence. Immediately came the sounds of terror from the prisoners, as well as the noises of fighting on the deck, the shouting and the scraping of metal against metal, sometimes punctuated by the thundering boom of a lightning bolt. From the side, Entreri threw a ring of keys to Jarlaxle, who redirected them more than caught them, launching them at Dabne. "Tend to them," Jarlaxle told the priestess. He looked into the wide-eyed stare on the face of the woman he had steadied and told her, "We've come to get you out of here and to safety." She screamed, her face a mask of horror as she stared at the drow. Jarlaxle sighed and shrugged and moved for the stairs that led to the hatch, Entreri and Zacnaphane coming up on either side of him. They even started past him, but he held out his arms to impede them. "Captain Bonnie knows the plan," he explained. "Let her execute her part."
They'd have an easier time of it with the three of us up there fighting with them, Zacnafane said, though he had to shout to be heard as the clomping of boots sounded right above them. Jarlaxle nodded, but said, "A bit longer. Let it settle and let Captain Arango be isolated." "I'll wade through his whole crew to get to him," Zack replied. "Unless, of course, you still think my two sticks would be no match for his grand sword." "They're not, but I trust you'll make up the disadvantage, and if not, I still have Artemis and Treri here." And Treri snorted, and then again even louder when Zack scowled. "You could have at least given me that whip," Zack said. "It is being studied by someone important," Jarlaxle answered. He held up his hands and paused, tilting his head to better hear. The fighting seemed less intense in that moment, or perhaps the skirmish had simply moved aside. "We go," Jarlaxle decided, but he still held back his companions. "After you, then," Entreri said, but Jarlaxle shook his head. He plucked the feather from his hat and threw it to the deck before him, where it transformed almost immediately into a giant flightless bird, one with thick legs and huge claws that could rake a man into four parts with one well-aimed strike. "After him," Jarlaxle corrected, and he ordered the diatrima forward. It went up the stairs in one stride and blew out the bulkhead with a powerful peck of its deadly beak. Small wings flapping wildly to help boost it, the bird rushed up and out onto the deck. "How will it know friend from foe?" Zack asked. "Oh, good point," said Jarlaxle, and he rushed up the stairs to direct his monster.
"Has he always been this insufferable?" Entreri asked Zack as they ascended the stairs side by side.
"You've known him as long as I, from what I can tell," Zack answered.
"Then yes, he has," said Entreri.
And Jarlaxle's champions leaped out onto the deck and immediately into the fray. Jarlaxle stopped at the top of the stairs directing his bird, which was doing more chasing than fighting, as none of the pirates, not even the vicious gnolls, wanted anything to do with it. Of course, that might have been due to the fact that it had come up onto the deck right into a pirate and was still carrying half of that victim's body around on one of its great talons, blood flying with every running stomp. Whatever the reason, more than the bird demanded the mercenary's attention, as he watched Zacnafane and Entreri roll immediately into their deadly dance. Not two dances, but one, the expert warriors finding harmony before they had taken their third step into the tumult. Jarlaxle had fought beside both. Both had fought beside Drizzt, and it seemed as if that was all they needed to fight side by side now. He had never doubted that together they would be beautiful to watch, working around each other, swapping targets seamlessly, yet this was something even he had to admire. And Treri spun the brilliant red blade of Karin's claw before his every turn, his left hand clutching the dagger Jarlaxle had given him to replace the infamous weapon he had once carried. Zacnafane worked a pair of swords as fluidly as he might his own hands, always holding them ready to block, to parry, to thrust, to sweep, whatever situation arose. At one point, Zack fled a pair of gnolls, both chasing right behind. Up the mast he ran, inverting as he caught his footholds, throwing himself backward in a reverse somersault, and parrying the swords of the pursuing gnolls once, twice, a dozen times, it seemed, as he turned upside down above them. The gnolls managed to stay alive, and Zack was left vulnerable on the descent, as he certainly had known he would be. But he wasn't in any danger, and he hadn't expected to be because he already had come to trust Artemis and Treri in combat. A red blade flashed between the gnolls and the falling Zack as Entreri sprinted through, using Karin's claw's magic to trail an opaque barrier of ash. As the human ran by, immediately falling into a fight with another pirate, the gnolls stabbed their swords ahead through the wall of floating ash, too slow to hit Entreri, too blindly to come near to Zacnafane. And through that wall came Zack, touching down, dropping low, rolling through the magical cloud beneath the stabs, then coming up too fast for a counter, blades angled perfectly to get under the dog-faced demon creature's ribs and slide up into their lungs. They tried to fight on, gasping and spewing blood, but Zacnafane had no more interest in the dying things and spun away to rejoin his partner.
"A thing of beauty," Jarlaxle whispered.
Even before Zack and Treri and the Diatrima had entered the fighting, Revenge's crew had gained most of Pelican's deck, pushing the majority of the remaining pirates to the higher ground of the sizable poop deck. Magical darkness engulfed the stairs in the front of that upper level, effectively sealing those pirates from the main fighting. Occasionally, a stray arrow or even a lightning bolt flashed out of the veritable wall of lightlessness, but fired blindly and usually ineffectively. Jarlaxle nodded his approval to Bonnie Charlie, as the fighting thinned and she cleverly arranged a battery of archers and wizards, ready to blast clear the poop deck if the pirates countered the magical darkness. Bonnie Charlie returned the nod as she batted aside a saber and countered with a quick overhand chop against the man's forearm. His sword went flying and he dropped to his knees, begging for mercy. The captain looked at Jarlaxle, who shrugged, giving her the choice. With another nod, Bunny Charlie walked around the kneeling pirate and kicked him flat to the deck, standing over him, ready to finish him if he made a threatening move. Some other pirates, human, elf, and dwarf, similarly surrendered. And following Bonnie Charlie's example, those revenge fighters secured them with less than lethal force. No such quarter was offered to any gnolls, however, with every one taken down or, if caught alone, quickly swarmed and overwhelmed and thrown into the shark-filled sea. The deck quieted in short order, save for the chanting of Revenge's priest's healing spells and the heavy steps of Jarlaxle's diatrima as he launched it for the captain's door, which was still visible between the globes of darkness that hid the stairs to the poop deck. The avian beast hardly slowed, plowing through the portal, then rushing about inside. Well, unless Pelican is set with secret holds, all remaining are up on that poop deck, Jarlaxle said loudly. What say you, Captain Arango, are you ready to surrender yet? As he finished, he nodded to a group of break-into-earth fighters, and a score of crossbows clicked, sending a swarm of quarrels tipped in sleeping poison through the wall of darkness. A dozen fireballs could follow, Arango, Jarlaxle called a moment later. You've nowhere to run and nowhere to hide. When all of the prisoners were dragged together near the prow, secured and guarded, Jarlaxle gave Bonnie Charlie a signal, and on her ensuing call, the darkness disappeared, revealing the holdouts. A few wizards, a pair of priests, a handful of human pirates, and a dozen gnolls crowded together on that higher deck.
Come on, then, challenged one large, black-bearded man with a great hat and so much jewelry that even Jarlaxle thought it gaudy. You got the bones for the fight?
It won't be much of a fight, Jarlaxle answered him, stating the obvious. The man, who was surely Captain Arango, spat and glared. He looked to a nearby wizard and nodded. Wait, Jarlaxle added, fearing some magical retreat to be imminent. For I do prefer a challenge and a wager. Your reputation precedes you, mighty Captain Arango. It would be a great shame to so unceremoniously send you and this fine vessel to the depths. Your ship is beaten, that much is obvious. And we have what we came for, the prisoners in your hold. So I offer you this. Single combat between you and one of my choosing. If he wins, you'll get the end you richly deserve. The only one you ever thought you'd get, of course. And if you win, I'll let you take your remaining crew and sail away on Pelican, but only on the condition that you never darken Luskin's horizon again.
What?
Intrary and several others all said, some more quietly than others.
He knows the outcome already, Zack assured him.
Now, Jarlaxle continued, I find that most charitable, and more so than you deserve. So what say you?
The large man looked all about, seeming confused.
As did the others of his crew, with many of them also flashing expressions of hope, fleeting though they were.
Pick yourself, then, Arango countered.
I would, but I don't like to get blood on me, yours or mine, Jarlaxle answered. Do you think your wizards will get you away before mine cut them down? Do you think they'll put you far enough away that I won't find you again, or with more ships than this? So fight, my champion. And I'll promise you that Luskin will never again hunt for you, no matter your crimes, as long as they are not committed in Luskin waters or against ships flying her flag. Arango spat again. No matter my pick, you must agree these are better odds than what you now face, Jarlaxle told him. Decide.
Arango put his hand on his sword hilt, a most beautiful orange and gold design of an avian creature. He came forward, smiling, to the rail and down. Bonnie Charlie pulled her crew back. Jarlaxle dismissed his diatrima as it came out the cabin door, startling Arango. "Go earn it," Jarlaxle said to Zach Nefane, who stepped forward to face the brutish pirate captain. "I knew it'd be a damn drow," Arango said. "Killed many of your kind. One more for good luck, eh?" "There isn't enough good luck in the world for you right now," Zack assured him, the two locking stairs, barely 3 strides apart on the starlit deck. "So they all thought," Arango replied, suddenly drawing forth a blade that seemed perfectly plain given the beauty of the hilt. Quicker than Arango's attempted thrust, Zack's blades came into his hands, his right slapping across to deflect the attack, left ready to stab in over the lowered sword. To Zack's surprise, the blade of Arango's sword simply went flying away. Zack was too strong and balanced to stumble in the absence of resistance, but he did hesitate, just for an eye blink, and in that fleeting moment, another blade, a shaft of light, brilliant and blinding, shot up from Arango's now-empty hilt. Eye stinging, Zack could only retreat, falling off to his right, cutting his left-hand blade behind to barely parry Arango's stab. The drow felt the heat of the blade as it came within a finger's breadth of his chin. "Ha!" Arango bellowed, pursuing with a cunning series of thrusts and sweeps, some one-handed, some two. He bore on, obviously confident that he had the drow half-blinded and unprepared. Zach Nefane knew it too. Gasps arose all about as Zach Nefane dove and rolled, leaped up and threw himself aside, then came back in at the closely pursuing captain with a desperate flourish, swords waving to block and to try to get him back to even ground. He didn't quite succeed, but he did slap a cleverly thrown dagger out of the air before it could reach him. Captain Arango was full of tricks indeed. Across the way, Artemis and Treri moved up beside Jarlaxle. All about them, humans and drow reacted with every movement of the duel, thinking Arango would finish the weapon master. "Easy," Jarlaxle told his friend, holding up his hand to keep Entreri back, for indeed, the man was leaning forward, hands clutching his sword and dagger hilts tightly. "Faith, my friend?" "Darkness, Zack," one drow called, and others quickly joined in, for the obvious move by Zack Nefane then would be to create a darkness globe about himself and the captain, negating the advantage of the brilliant sword light. "Why doesn't he?" Entreri asked after a few more attacks and counters, Arango keeping Zack on his heels, not surrendering the advantage at all. "Because you wouldn't either," Jarlaxle said. "I cannot," Entreri reminded. Jarlaxle looked at him and smirked. "You wouldn't if you could, whether it be stupid pride or confidence." Entreri wanted to disagree, but he couldn't. He looked back to the fight, which seemed dire for Zack Nefane, as the weapon master was being pressed toward the rail by the huge captain, with only the sea behind him. When Entreri looked lower at Zack Nefane's feet, though, he found himself nodding approvingly. Captain Arango's gleeful expression silently screamed, "Over the rail ye go!" as he pressed in those last 2 strides, his powerful attacks forcing Zack Nefane back. And Zack was gone, and Arango's shout started out as one of glee. He cut it short and wildly spun right, however, cutting his blade across at waist height, for somehow this clever drow had not fallen over the rail, but had backhopped up against it and sprung away to the side in the space of an eye blink. Now Zack was coming back in. Now the initiative was his. Now he had acclimated to the unexpected brightness. He leaped above the captain's slicing sword, even managing to put the sole of his boot against it and kick it down and out. And his swords came in hard and fast. To his great credit, Captain Arango managed to quick step away to minimize the bite, and to his armor's credit, his resulting wounds were not significant. But magnificent Zack Nefane was hardly done. He landed, leaning forward, and threw himself in that same direction, and now it was Arango working his sword frantically, trying to keep the weapon master's nipping blades at bay. Jarlaxle watched it all with a growing smile. Zacnafane is toying with him, Entreri whispered at his side. Only an expert swordsman would recognize that, Jarlaxle knew, and Entreri, of course, was as fine as any. Zacnafane's swords worked as if they were wielded by two different warriors, independent and yet still in perfect coordination. The blades came at Arango from so many different angles, all working to make him move his own sword or turn his substantial body with maximum effort. Arango, too, was a fine warrior, a veteran of 100 battles at sea and on land. But even those onlookers not so skilled could see that he had to greatly change the new equation of the fight here, and quickly. Zacnafane's movements were fluid and easy, while Arango had to jerk and leap. The brilliant light of his blade showed the sweat gathering about his face, droplets shining on his wild and huge black beard. His breath came faster and harder. Zacnafane had him cornered in the angle where the rail met the wall of the captain's cabin. Arango had nowhere to run. Arango had to change the flow of the battle. He knew it. Everyone watching knew it. And Zacnafane knew it. Zack's right-hand sword swept out over the rail and came in from the side. Arango blocked it hard with a two-hand parry, then sent his sword back the other way and up high to deflect Zack's second blade. Arango had his opening. As his arms came across, he dropped his upper hand, his right hand, to his right hip. Still having enough control and strength to surely push aside the drow's descending blade with his left, that freed right hand went for a dagger on his belt, thinking to throw it fast, which should at least break him out of the corner. Only his parrying sword did not connect with any meaningful weight, which meant this wasn't an opening at all. The clever drow warrior had led him into a trap. For Zacnafane was turning to his left, even as Arango began the parry, turning and rolling his right elbow to bring that blade stabbing in again, and for the spot where he knew Arango's right hand would go. The captain howled in agony as Zack's sword plunged between Arango's thumb and pointer finger, then into his hip between the seams in his leather waistcoat. Zacnafane rolled to his left some more, toward the middle of the deck, leaving the sword stuck right there, pinning Arango. The captain staggered out from the corner, left hand coming down, still holding his sword as he tried to gingerly brush Zack's out of his hip and his hand. But Zack was already moving, leaping forward to the captain's side, running up the cabin wall and springing away, inverting and twisting right above the captain, landing in a spin and coming around fast and hard, both hands on his remaining blade. Arango's severed sword arm fell to the deck, hands still grasping his blade of light. The man staggered. Zack stabbed him in the belly, retracted and sent his sword tip up, cutting beard, splitting chin. The drow tugged his second sword free as his right-hand blade descended to scrape against the shoulder of Arango's stubbed arm. In stabbed the left blade once and again, and Zacnafane went into a great swirling spin, dipping low then coming up diagonally with both swords, forcing Arango to turn and stagger to his left. Zack rolled with the cut and took another circuit to leap and circle kick Arango square in the back, pitching the bleeding captain headlong over the rail and into the shark-infested waters. The deck was perfectly silent, a great hush of shock, admiration, and confusion. "Really?" Jarlaxle asked, holding his hand out toward the water, his expression one of disgust. "He had some fine jewelry." Zack shrugged, wiped his swords with a quick crisscross along the sleeve of the severed arm, and sheathed them in an easy and impossibly fast movement. He stood straight and held his hand out toward the deck. "I didn't lose the sword." Jarlaxle shrugged and snorted. "True.